welcome to Condor Currents, the podcast that flows through the latest in computer architecture research and RISC-V innovation. I'm Ty Garibay, president of Condor Computing, and we have a fantastic episode lined up for you today. This episode is brought to you by Condor Computing, high-performance RISC-V processor IP from Andes Technology, the world's leading RISC-V processor IP provider with 30% market share and over 12 billion SoCs shipped. Learn more at condorcomputing.com. Today, we're diving into two really interesting archive papers, one on how coding agents are actually using LLM infrastructure, which has some surprising implications for compute design, and another on open source silicon education that I think is genuinely exciting for the next generation of chip designers. Plus, we've got three news stories from the RISC-V world, including a framework laptop upgrade that caught my eye this week. Let's get into it, all right? First up, we have a paper called TraceLab Characterizing Coding Agent Workloads for LLM, serving from Kanzu, Matthew Jacob, Chenxi Ma, and colleagues. Now, at first glance, you might think, hey, Ty, this is a podcast about computer architecture. Why are we talking about LLM serving? And that's a fair question, but here's the thing. When we talk about how software workloads behave, that directly informs how we design the hardware that runs them. Understanding the workload is the architecture problem. So let me break down what these researchers are actually doing here. The core problem they're tackling is this. Coding agents think tools like GitHub Copilot or Cursor or any of the AI assistants that actually write and run code on your behalf. These systems are becoming a massive category of workload. Not just someone asking an AI a question, but a full autonomous agent that's spinning up multiple model calls. Executing code, reading files, iterating on results, it's a fundamentally different usage pattern than a simple chatbot. And the challenge for the infrastructure teams building the serving systems, the hardware and software stacks that actually run these models, is that they're flying blind. There's almost no good public data on what these workloads actually look like in the wild. How long are the prompts?
How many back and forth exchanges happen in a session? How bursty is the traffic? Without answers to those questions, you're basically guessing when you design your serving infrastructure. Think of it like trying to design a highway system without any traffic data. You might know cars exist and roughly how fast they go, but if you don't know whether you're designing for rush hour commuters or long-haul truckers, you're going to make very different design choices. And those choices matter enormously. Cache sizes, memory bandwidth, interconnect topology, all of it. What TraceLab does is collect and release a real trace of roughly 4,300 coding agent sessions. These are actual usage patterns, not synthetic benchmarks or academic toy problems, and they span multiple agents and multiple model families, which is important because different models have very different characteristics in terms of context length, output, verbosity, and so on. Now, from a computer architecture lens, this is gold because one of the things we care deeply about when designing processors and accelerators is the memory access pattern, LLM.
Inference is fundamentally a memory bandwidth problem. The compute is almost secondary to how fast you can feed data to the arithmetic units. So when you understand that coding agents tend to have longer context windows, more iterative back and forth, and potentially very different pre-fill to decode ratios compared to simple query response workloads, that changes your hardware requirements significantly. The KV cache, which is essentially where the model stores its working memory for a conversation, has to be sized and managed very differently for an agent that might run a 50-step iterative debugging loop versus a user who asks a single question. If you're building custom silicon for LLM inference, which a lot of companies are right now, you need this kind of data to make sensible architectural decisions. And here's what I find particularly compelling about this work. They're releasing the traces publicly. That's the TraceLab part of the name. It's a resource for the community.
So if you're working on inference hardware, if you're designing memory subsystems for AI accelerators, or if you're building software infrastructure for serving systems, you now have real data to work with. This is the kind of contribution that has compounding value over time. Check the show notes for links to the paper and the data set. The broader takeaway here is that the shift to agentic AI isn't just a software trend. It's a workload shift that has real implications for silicon design. At Condor Computing, we think a lot about the intersection of RISC, five cores, and specialized compute for emerging workloads. The RISC-V ISA's extensibility is actually a fantastic fit for building custom acceleration near the core for exactly these kinds of memory-intensive inference tasks. Papers like TraceLab give the field the empirical foundation to do that design work rigorously rather than speculatively. All right, let's move on to our second paper, and this one is really close to my heart. It's called CROC. Training the Next Generation Chip Designers on Domain-Specific End-to-End Open Source Silicon from Enrico Zilioli, Philippe Soder, Thomas Benz, and colleagues. What a title. What a project. So the problem this paper is addressing is something I feel viscerally every time we're trying to hire. There's a massive skills gap in the semiconductor industry when it comes to hands-on VLSI design experience. Very large scale integration, that's the full stack of chip design from architecture spec all the way down to fabricated silicon. And the gap exists because of a structural problem in how we teach this stuff. Most VLSI courses at universities rely on expensive, restrictively licensed electronic design automation tools, your Cadence, your Synopsys, your Mentor tools. These are the industry standard EDA tools, and they cost an enormous amount of money. On top of that, the process design kits, the PDKs that tell your tools how a specific semiconductor fab's manufacturing process works, those are also typically proprietary and under NDA. And then the reference designs and IP that students build on top of, also often closed source. So what you end up with is students who maybe got to use a heavily restricted academic license for a few semesters, working on designs they can never fully understand or share because everything is locked up. They graduate knowing the theory, but never having done a real tape out. They've read about the highway, but never driven on it. Croc changes that picture. The team built a complete end-to-end open source domain-specific system on chip design that students can use from architecture specification all the way to actual fabricated silicon. Mm-hmm. And they did it using the open source EDA stack, tools like OpenRoad and open PDKs like Sky13. This is the community that's been building open source silicon infrastructure for the past several years. And Croc is showing that you can now build genuinely educational real-world SoC designs on top of it. Now, the domain-specific part is interesting. They're targeting SoCs for AI, robotics, and automotive applications, exactly the domains where the industry is screaming for more engineers. These aren't toy designs. They have real architectural complexity, real constraints, real trade-offs that students have to navigate. From an architecture perspective, what I love about this is that you can't really learn chip design from a textbook alone.
There's a reason the best architects I know have scars from tapeouts gone wrong, from timing closure nightmares, from power budget overruns, from that horrible moment when you realize the physical implementation disagrees with your logical design. You need to experience that to internalize it, and here's where RISC-V plays a starring role. Because the open source hardware ecosystem has converged around RISC-V as the ISA of choice for open designs. Cores like CVA-6, IBEX, and others, these are the building blocks that open educational SoCs like Croc are built around. When you teach chip design on an open RISC-V core, students can look at every single line of RTL. They can understand the pipeline, modify it, break it, fix it. That's an education you simply cannot get with a black box proprietary core under a restrictive license. At Andes Technology, which is the company behind Condor Computing's RISC-V IP portfolio, we obviously have commercial RISC-V cores, but we also deeply believe in the value of the open source ecosystem around RISC-V. It's part of what makes the architecture so vibrant.
When the next generation of chip designers learns their craft on RISC-V, that's good for the entire industry and good for RISC-V adoption long term. The Croc paper also represents something philosophically important, the idea that silicon should be a public good, that the knowledge of how to build chips should be freely shareable. We've seen open source transform software. Open source silicon is still earlier in that journey, but papers like this demonstrate that the trajectory is real. Check the show notes for the Croc paper. If you're in academia or you run engineering training programs, this is required reading. Okay, let's shift to the news. First up, a story from Hackster.io about a RISC-V soft processor system on the DE10 Lite. Now, for those who might not be familiar, the DE10 Lite is a popular FPGA development board from Terrasic, and it's widely used in university courses and hobbyist projects, and soft processors, processors implemented in programmable logic rather than fixed silicon, are a fantastic way to experiment with CPU design.
The story here is that someone built out a complete RISC-V soft processor system on this platform, and Hackster.io covered it. That might sound incremental, but I want to put it in context because I think it represents something meaningful about where RISC-V is as an ecosystem. When I started working with RISC-V years ago, getting a RISC-V core running on an FPGA required significant effort, deep expertise, and often a lot of custom work to get any real software running on it. The toolchain support was spotty, the documentation was scattered, and the learning curve was steep. The fact that this kind of project is now a Hackster.io write-up, accessible, reproducible, tutorial style minus, tells you a lot about how far the ecosystem has matured. FPGA-based soft processors are actually really important in the RISC-V story for a few reasons. First, they're how a lot of custom extensions get prototyped. Before you spend the time and money to tape out a custom processor, you validate it in programmable logic.
Second, for education and research, an FPGA gives you the ability to modify the processor architecture itself, not just the software running on it, but the actual hardware. That's an incredibly powerful learning environment. And the DE10 light specifically is interesting because it uses an Intel Cyclone, VFPGA, which has enough logic resources to implement a reasonably capable RISC 5-core with peripherals. You can get a real system running, UR2 GPIO memory controller, and actually boot software. That's a complete system design education in a box. For the computer architects in our audience, I'd encourage you to think about FPGA-based RISC V systems, not as toys, but as legitimate prototyping platforms. Some of the most interesting early-stage architecture research happens on FPGAs before anyone commits to RTL hardening. The barrier to entry is lower than ever, and the RISC V ecosystem tooling keeps improving. Check the show notes for the Hackster link if you want to dig into the specifics of this build. Next news story, and this one got me genuinely excited. Now you can put a Spacemit K3 RISC V processor in a Framework Laptop 13 from Lilliputing. Okay.
Let me just take a moment here. A RISC V processor. In a Framework Laptop, the modular, repairable, user-upgradable laptop, this is a real product story. For context, Framework Laptops are built around an upgradable architecture where you can swap out the main board, different processor, completely different compute platform in the same chassis. And someone has now made a main board with Spacemit's K3 processor available as an option. The Spacemit K3 is based on the X60-core cluster, and it's a RISC V application processor with 8 cores, capable of running a full Linux stack and targeting the kind of performance envelope you'd want for a lightweight laptop or edge computing use case. It's not going to win any benchmarks against the latest Apple Silicon or AMD chips, and we'll actually come back to that in a moment. But the fact that it exists and it fits in a Framework laptop is a milestone worth celebrating. Think about what it means for the architecture community. For years, RISC V has been dominant in microcontrollers and embedded systems, your IoT devices, your RISC V-based microcontrollers and industrial applications. The application processor space, the chips that run full desktop operating systems that power laptops and phones, that's been much harder to crack. The software ecosystem requirements are much more demanding. The performance requirements are higher and the competitive pressure from ARM is intense. But here's the thing, every technology platform goes through this. There was a time when ARM processors were considered too slow and too limited for serious computing. And now ARM-based chips are in the fastest laptops on the planet. The Framework K3 mainboard is not the destination, it's a waypoint. It's proof that the RISC V software ecosystem is mature enough to run a daily driver computing environment, even if performance still has room to grow. For anyone in our audience who does Linux development, compiler work, or software toolchain development, having a RISC V laptop option is actually really useful. You can test your code on native RISC V hardware without setting up emulation. That's meaningful for the ecosystem. Check the show notes for the Lilliputing story. Lots of good details on what's supported and what the experience is like.
And now, speaking of performance, our third news story brings us back to earth a little bit from Foronix. Current RISC V CPUs being too slow causes headaches for Fedora. Approximately 5 times slower builds. Yeah, this is real. This is important. And I don't think we should shy away from talking about it. The story here is that Fedora, one of the major Linux distributions, is having significant challenges supporting RISC V as a primary architecture because the available RISC V hardware is just too slow for the continuous integration and package building workloads that maintaining a Linux distro requires. They're seeing build times roughly 5 times slower than on comparable x86 or ARM hardware. And look, I want to be honest about this because I think it's the intellectually honest thing to do. RISC V application processors are behind, not because the ISA is bad. The ISA is clean, modern, and well-designed. Not because the ecosystem is bad. We just talked about a RISC V laptop and an accessible FPGA tutorial. But because building competitive, high-performance, out-of-order processors is enormously expensive and time-consuming. And the RISC V ecosystem is younger. The chips that are available today for application processor use cases are mostly in-order or simple, out-of-order designs. They're good for power-efficient embedded workloads. They're good for specific domain-accelerated applications, but they're not yet competitive with a modern ARM Cortex-A or the latest AMD Zen core on raw single-threaded compute-intensive work, like compiling software. This 5-time slowdown on build workloads is essentially a single-threaded integer performance story. Compilation is notoriously hard to parallelize well, and it exercises your pipeline, your branch predictor, your cache hierarchy, your memory subsystem, all the things that mature architectures have been tuning for decades. The path forward is clear, and it's happening. Companies are investing in high-performance RISC V cores. There are several credible out-of-order RISC V microarchitecture projects underway, some commercial, some open source. At Andy's Technology, the performance roadmap for RISC V IP
is exactly about closing this gap.
The question is really one of time and investment, not fundamental technical viability. But the Fedora story is a useful reminder that ecosystem adoption isn't just about toolchain support or software compatibility. It's about performance. Linux distributions need to be able to build their packages in a reasonable amount of time. That's a hard performance floor, and the RISC-V community needs to clear it. I'd actually argue stories like this are healthy. They create clear, concrete performance targets for the hardware community to aim at. The good news? This problem is solvable. The ISA doesn't hold us back. The open specification model of RISC-V actually helps here because multiple companies can invest in high-performance microarchitectures in parallel, competing on implementation quality rather than on who controls the spec. That's a healthy dynamic, and I believe we'll see competitive RISC-V application processors within the next few years. We're already seeing early indicators of that with some of the designs being taped out right now. All right, that's going to do it for today's episode of Condor Currents.
We covered a lot of ground, from understanding how coding agents actually stress LLM serving infrastructure, to an exciting open source chip design education platform, to the fascinating and sometimes humbling state of RISC-V in the application processor space. There's never a dull moment in this industry, and that's why I love it. Con.